if they want to.
Let them talk with Paul DiRienzo, keeping an eye on the New World Order. 1:30 Wednesday night, Thursday morning, following Robert Knight. Let them talk on WBAI 99.5 FM.
Love so. Let them whisper, for they know not what's between you and I. I'll keep on loving you until the day I die.
Range of American society, it's the majority of the uninsured are white, minority.
I'm nervous. I'm afraid you're going to hurt me. You're going to shoot me.
African American.
I have belongings here. Excuse me. You cannot.
Ma'am, we interrupt the story from Mark Beavis on HML because Dennis Bernstein of France Fleischpoint has been put on administrative leave for his playing of a press conference concerning the crisis here at KPFA on Fleischpoint just within the last half an hour. The KPFA, the guards that Pacifica has placed in KPFA, are trying to drag him out of the studio.
The and here you are, ready to.
And you can hear that in the background.
What is Pacifica coming to?
Garland Ganter, who is the general manager of the Pacifica station in Houston, was brought in by Pacific Executive Director.
This is not a takeover of the station. Pacifica owns. The Pacifica Foundation owns license to all the five stations. These are stations that are our responsibility in a legal sense through the FCC. But both WBAI and KPFA are held by the Pacifica Foundation, which is a corporation, a non-profit corporation to be sure, but that is the structure in this country that we hold licenses.
By the way, if anyone here is in marketing or advertising, kill yourself. Thank you. Just planting seeds. Planting seeds is all I'm doing. No joke here. Really, seriously, kill yourself. You are no rationalization for what you do. You are Satan's little helpers. Kill yourself, kill yourself, kill yourself now. Now, back to the show. Seriously, I know the marketing people are going to be a joke coming out. There's no fucking joke. Suck a tailpipe, hang yourself. Borrow a pistol from an NRA buddy. Do something. Rid the world of your evil fucking presence. Okay, back to the show. Planting seeds. They bear fruit? I don't know. Feel better planting.
You know what bugs me, though? I know everyone here who's in marketing is now thinking the same thing. Oh, cool. Bill's going for that anti-marketing dollar. That's a huge market.
Quit it. Don't turn everything into a dollar sign, please. Ooh, the plea for sanity dollar. Huge, huge market. Look at our research.
You know, in marketing, the most evil concept ever. Like, for instance, I saw this. You know what they do to movies now? This just drives me crazy. They show movies now to test audiences before the movie is released, and then change the movie depending on how these 200 random Yahoos underline Yahoo point some fingers at it with a big exclamation fucking point. Yeah, fucking who liked it or did not like it, as though we are all the same, as though we have the same taste, as though. For instance, saw a movie this year called Basic Instinct. Now, Bill's quick capsule review.
Piece of shit.
Thank you. That's all it was, by the way. Don't get caught up in the phony hysteria surrounding this
piece of shit film.
Was it too sexist? And what about the... Did you think...
You're way off base. You've forgotten how to perceive correctly. Take a deep breath. Watch it again. Hey, it's a piece of shit. Exactly. That's all it ever was a piece of shit. I just had to say that and clear it up. This phony hype around this piece of shit film drove me crazy. Anyway, after I saw it about 8 times... Come to find out, after seeing this film, all of the lesbian sex scenes... Let me repeat this part of the show. All of the lesbian sex scenes were cut out of this film because the test audience was turned off by them. Boy, is my thumb not on the pulse of America. I don't want to seem like Randy Pan the goat boy. That was the only reason I went to that piece of shit show. Sorry. If I had been in that test audience, the only one out front protesting that film would have been Michael Douglas demanding his part be put back in. I swear I was in that movie. I swear I was. Well, gee, Mike, the movie started. Sharon Stone was eating another woman for an hour and a half. Then the credits rolled. I don't remember seeing your scrawny ass. Was that you in the corner when she flipped her over and started eating her butt? Was that? Oh, yeah, you were good. You were really good. I was watching something else, but I saw you real briefly. She flipped her over, opened her teeth, started eating her ass, and I said, was that Michael? Oh, who gives a fuck? Look at that. See, what I'm saying is it'd be a different film if I was the test audience. That's all I'm trying to get at here.
In every American community, you have varying shades of political opinion. One of the shadiest of these is the liberals. An outspoken group on many subjects. 10 degrees to the left of center in good times. 10 degrees to the right of center if it affects them personally. So here then is a lesson in safe logic.
I cried when they shot Medgar Evers. Tears ran down my spine. And I cried when they shot Mr. Kennedy. As though I'd lost a father of mine. But Malcolm X got what was coming. He got what he asked for this time. So love me, love me, love me, I'm a liberal. Get it? I go to civil rights rallies, and I put down the old D.A.R. D.A.R., that's the Dykes of the American Revolution. I love Harry and Sidney and Sammy. I hope every colored boy becomes a star. But don't talk about revolution. That's going a little bit too far. So love me, love me, love me. I'm a liberal. I cheered when Humphrey was chosen. My faith in the system restored. And I'm glad that the commies were thrown out from the AFL-CIO board. And I love Puerto Ricans and Negroes as long as they don't move next door. So love me, love me, love me, I'm a liberal. Ah, the people of old Mississippi should all hang their heads in shame. Now I can't understand how their minds work. What's the matter? Don't they watch Les Cray? But if you ask me to bus my children, I hope the cops take down your name. So love me, love me, love me. I'm a liberal. Yes, I read New Republic and Nation. I've learned to take every view. You know, I've memorized Lerner and Golden. I feel like I'm almost a Jew. But when it comes to times like Korea, there's no one more red, white, and blue. So love me, love me, love me. I'm a liberal. I vote for the Democratic Party. They want the UN to be strong. I attend all the Pete Seeger concerts. He sure gets me singing those songs. And I'll send all the money you ask for. But don't ask me to come on along. So love me, love me, love me. I'm a liberal. Sure, once I was young and impulsive. I wore every conceivable pin. Even went to socialist meetings. Learned all the old union hymns. Ah, but I've grown older and wiser. And that's why I'm turning you in. So love me, love me, love me. I'm a liberal.
Oh my God! Ah! The liberals are taking over the studio. First it was cruise missiles. Well, you know, several hundred people demonstrated outside KPFA tonight, Wednesday night, including author Alice Walker, who was greeted with screams of approval. Freedom is such a constant struggle, Ms. Walker said when the crowd quieted down, but I have to say that I never expected to be standing here in front of KPFA talking about trying to save KPFA. This is the place that we consider ours. This is our station. Alice Walker, who spoke also about Mumia Abu-Jamal.
I'm Alice Walker. As Mumia himself says, the choice, as every choice, is yours. To fight for freedom or encagement, liberty or slavery, life or death. Spread the word of life far and wide. Talk to friends, read and open their eyes, even to doorways of perception you feared to look into yesterday. Hold your heart open to the truth.
And I just wanted to mention Mumia has a response to the Vanity Fair hit piece. Mumia made a statement on July 9th, and it says, "Once again, we hear about a so-called confession, but instead of 2 months later, this comes over a decade later. We don't hear it from a priest, from a lawyer, or from a personal friend, but from an official visitor of the Pennsylvania Prison Society over 10 years later. A lie is a lie, whether made today or 10 years later, but I suppose Mr. Block wanted his 15 minutes of fame, in which case I hope he has received it. I find it remarkable that this rumor-turned-lie was never brought to my attention by the author, by Mr. Block himself, or by Vanity Fair magazine, which never contacted me. Welcome to snuff journalism. I look forward to the state producing this witness, Mr. Block, after I am granted a new trial. The only thing worse than a forgotten confession is one allegedly born on the false wings of harassment. If ever one needed proof of the state's desperation, here it is. I thank Vanity Fair, not for their work, but for stoking this controversy, because controversy leads to questioning, and one can only question this belated confession." And you're listening to Let Him Talk. I'm Paul DiRienzo with Ms. Joan Marie Moosey at
Hi,
my
everybody.
Side. And our guests tonight, here in the studio, Patty Heffley of Save Our Station, SOS.
Hello.
With us last week after she was arrested at the civil disobedience in Philadelphia.
That's true. Now
for Mumia.
In the flesh here, not over the phone. Yeah. And on the phone from upstate New York is Lynn Gerry. Lynn Gerry?
Lynn Gary.
Lynn Gary, I have it right. Because, you know, I read all your stuff on the internet, and we actually talked for the first time today after many times, many messages I've read. You're a prolific contributor to the Free Pacifica website and mailing list, and have been, before just recently moving to this part of the country, you were living out in California and were very much involved with the struggle, the Pacifica struggle there.
Yeah, that's correct. I'm a former staff member and shop steward, in fact, of KPFK in Los Angeles, and I am the keeper of the Free Pacifica website as well now.
And welcome. Welcome to Let 'Em Talk.
Pleased to be here. Thanks.
And, of course, before that, before we listened to Alice Walker, we listened to Phil Oakes and Love Me, I'm a Liberal. And before that, Bill Hicks, comedian, from his album Arizona Bay, and... what do you call it? Marketing and advertising.
Yep.
And that, of course, is Miss Joan Marie Moosey's wonderful late cousin, Bill Hicks,
great
comedian.
Baby cousin.
And also, just one more little bit of business here. I just want to make sure that people know that we will be webcasting this program starting next week. The webcast is off for technical difficulties, but we'll be back on starting July 19th. And you can get us at www.wbaifree.org. So you should pass the word to friends and whoever.
Thank you, Paul Williams.
Thanks, Paul Williams, and all the others at anomalies.net and Nibiru Systems. And Soria Ransom and Nibiru Systems and others who are in this list. And thank you, Paul Williams. I want to begin our discussion. And we'll be going to the phones here at Let 'Em Talk, 212-209-2900, with the text of the infamous Palmer letter. And I have that before me. This is a letter from Michael Palmer, who's has a very interesting email address, PalmerMichael@HoustonGalleria. He's from Houston, Texas, and the Galleria being one of the more tacky, I'm told, tacky, commercialistic-type places. He's a real estate developer. And he sent an email, allegedly to Mary Frances Berry, who's the director of Pacifica, and as well the U.S. Civil Rights Commission. And I, as a reporter, I've always wondered how a group, the U.S. Civil Rights Commission, which is investigating police brutality officially in New York City, the director of that of the, a radio station that's covering and is well known for its role in covering police brutality, if that's not a conflict of interest. And I talked to a number of reporters who expressed the feeling that they believe it is at heart a conflict of interest, that a person should not be the chief government investigator of the situation and also the head of a radio network that specializes in covering this issue. I've had problems with that from the very beginning, and I've reported on this for Pacifica, and I have to say I don't understand how the head of the U.S. Civil Rights Commission can also be the director of Pacifica and how that isn't a conflict of interest, considering the overlap of both organizations. So maybe other people can clarify that for me, and maybe other people who can have who are out there, callers, can comment on what they think, if they think that this is a problem or should be a problem or is just a minor part of the problem. As a reporter, I found it somewhat problematic. Also, a couple other issues. Well, I'll get to them as we go along because I do have some feelings about this.
Are you going to read the letter?
Yeah, I'm going to read the letter. Okay.
One thing, too. This Michael Palmer, he is the treasurer-elect on the Pacifica National Board. Michael Palmer is the treasurer-elect.
He's That's the treasurer-elect. Okay. Well, this is what the treasurer-elect of the Pacifica National Board wrote in an email that wound up in the hands of the pro-freedom for KPFA forces. I salute your Hello, Dr. Barry. I salute your fortitude in scheduling a news conference opportunity in the beloved Bay Area regarding one of the most pressing issues of our time. But seriously, I was under the impression there was support in the proper quarters and a definite majority for shutting down that unit and reprogramming immediately. Has that changed? Is there consensus among the national staff that anything other than that is acceptable, bearable? I recall Cheryl saying that the national staff wanted to know with certitude that they supported 100% by the board in whatever direction was taken. What direction is being taken? As an update for you and Lynn, I spoke with the only radio broker I know last week, and his research shows $750,000 to $1.25 million for KPFB. There would be a very shallow pool of buyers for a repeater signal such as this, and it would be difficult to do a marketing effort quietly due to this shortage of buyers. So there is no profound latent value to that asset. The primary signal would lend itself to a quiet marketing scenario of discreet presentation to logical and qualified buyers. This is the best radio market in history, and while public companies may see a dilutive effect from a sale due to the approximate 12 months repositioning effort needed, they would still be aggressive for such a signal. Private media companies would be the most aggressive in terms of price, which he thinks would be in the $65 to $75 million range, depending on various aspects of a deal. It would be possible to acquire other signals in the area, possibly more than one, to reestablish operations, but it could take a few years to complete if we wanted to maximize proceedings for the initial license transfer, or leave about only $10 to $20 million in arbitrage gain when purchase is complete. None of this reflects tax consequences. This broker, just like any other that would undertake such an effort, would need certain agreements in place prior to starting. Mary, I think any such transfer we would ever consider requires significant analysis, not so much regarding a decision to go forward, but how to best undertake the effort and to deploy the resulting capital with the least amount of tax, legal, and social disruption. I believe the Finance Committee will undertake a close review of the audiographics data provided recently to determine what it is costing us per listener, per subscriber, per market, per hour of programming, in order to give the executive director and the general managers benchmarks for improvement. Even with that data, my feeling is that a more beneficial disposition would be of the New York signal.
Oops.
As there is a smaller subscriber base without the long and emotional history as the Bay Area. Far more associated value, a similarly dysfunctional staff, though far less effective, and an overall better opportunity to redefine Pacifica going forward. It is simply the more strategic asset. With this in mind, I would encourage frank description of the realities of the media environment we operate in and of Pacifica's available resources to participate and have impact in the evolving media world. The executive committee, at a minimum, should have access to experts, whether from Wall Street, NPR, CPB, Microsoft, or otherwise, to get a strong reality check, me included, about radio and Pacifica's position in it so that informed decisions can be made. My feeling is that we are experiencing a slow financial death, which is having the normal emotional outburst commensurate with such a disease. We will continually experience similar events. In fact, we have been experiencing similar events over the past several years, primarily because we are not self-supporting through subscriber contributions and have a self-imposed constraint on asset redeployment that leaves us cash-starved at a time when our industry is being propelled in new directions, each requiring capital outlays of consequence. We're boxed in at our own will. This board needs to be educated quickly and to take action that will be far more controversial than the KPFA situation. How can we get there? So now I've exhaled more than I should, but you know where I'm at. Let's do something. MDP. And that was from Michael Palmer, the treasurer-elect of Pacifica. And people should maybe get in touch with Mr. Palmer at mpalmer@cbrishardellis.com. mpalmer@cbrichardellis.com. mpalmer@cbrichardellis.com. And,
Paul, by the way.
Yes.
What that is, Richard Ellis is a Coldwell Banker real estate brokerage firm in Houston. So, yes, people should definitely get in touch with it. In fact, they might, I don't happen to have that number here, but now that you mention it, I'm sure that directory assistants in Houston could provide the Coldwell Banker, Richard Ellis Coldwell Banker office in Houston. And it would be very interesting if their phones were so busy that nobody could make any sales there because of Michael Palmer.
I have no great love for real estate agents. I'll leave it at that.
It's hard to live in New York and have a great love for real estate.
You know, I just don't have much much love for real estate agents. Yeah. Well, what's the latest? Does anybody have any recent reports of what happened tonight? Because I know there was another demonstration.
Yes, and unfortunately, my reports are sketchy, but this is the bottom line. There were hundreds of people out in front of the station, police in riot gear, closed off Martin Luther King, which is a street in front of the station. It's a four-lane street, two lanes in each direction. More than 40 people were arrested. I saw some clips over the net of...
This is on top of the 52 yesterday.
That's correct.
So it's now up to 92 plus 13, so we're talking about 115 people.
And were these citizens' arrests also, or did the police do these arrests?
108 people or
something.
That, so, okay.
105.
Yeah, that I do not know. However, I have reason to believe that none of the Pacifica management staff was even in the building. Now, I would imagine that Garland Ganter, also from Houston, you know, there's a real, like, stench coming up from Houston, I got to tell you, in all of this, was brought in to be their hatchet man, and who was the one who ordered Dennis Bernstein dragged away by armed guards yesterday, et cetera, and all. I imagine that he must have been in the station there holding down the fort.
Well, that shows some wonderful management skills.
Mm-hmm. Well, imagine this, a nonprofit organization that arrests its donors.
And uses armed guards to execute its orders.
Mm-hmm.
It's fascinating, really.
Where do we go from here? I mean, the leadership of Pacifica seems to be saying that they're willing to hold out until things cool down.
To the streets and to court, both.
Mm-hmm. What's happening in court?
Okay. Today or tomorrow, there's going to be a suit filed in California Superior Court against the Pacifica Board of Directors for an illegal change of governance. I'm not sure how much this has been covered, but briefly, the egregious and arrogant behavior and the escalation of the repression has happened since an event in February when the Pacifica National Board, as a culmination of years of work, finally succeeded in changing the bylaws of the foundation to make itself self-selecting, meaning they choose themselves. No one else has any ability to choose directors or remove directors, and they're in their close little circle given the legal powers of ownership by law to dispose of assets and everything else that goes along with it. And they thought, well, they're in the catbird seat, and then they really started to move forcefully to prosecute their new agenda, of which this Michael Palmer letter is typical. Now, prior to that time, each of the five stations has a local advisory board, and these boards selected two members of the board as delegates that would go to become directors on the national board. And that was abolished, as well as voting rights for the elected staff representative to the advisory board somewhat earlier. Now, according to California corporation law, if there is going to be a bylaws change that disenfranchises a class of voters within the corporation, those voters must have a chance to vote themselves on the change and approve it, and this did not happen. So the plaintiffs in this particular suit are a variety of board members from WBAI's board, KPFA's board, KPFK's board, and WPFW's board. I don't believe that they were able to find anyone in Houston at this point. I know there are more people that are signing on to this as it goes, and people are saying, well, you know, why do a suit like that? Essentially, this seemed, after some analysis, the legal team has been analyzing sort of different roads to approach this in courts, because as you know, people who listen to Let Him Talk know that the law and justice are not the same thing. So it was a matter of finding an area of law which would hopefully have the effect of rolling back the governance change and crippling their ability to act, because if the board was then illegally constituted, all of their decisions would be voided. The individual directors might in fact be liable to personal lawsuits. The corporate veil that protects directors of a corporation ordinarily would be rent, and they would all become individually open to be sued as a result of their transactions as directors. Now, because of the Michael Palmer letter, which shows such documented malicious intent to secretly dispose of assets and change the very nature of the foundation that these people are supposed to be stewards of, Dan Siegel, who was heading up the legal effort, a lawyer in the San